Okay, first I'd like to thank the organizers and the coordinators for putting up such a wonderful workshop and exciting conference, and for giving me this chance to speak here. So this work starts when I was still a postdoc at UC Berkeley, and it's in collaboration with Dan Bajas, a student at UC Berkeley, and Fernando De Juan, a postdoc and long-term visitor at Berkeley. Now I have started as a junior faculty at Ohio State. So part of this work is posted on archive, and I will focus on another part, which is unpublished. So a topological insulator, its discovery tells us actually the important role symmetry plays in quantum phases. So in the presence of symmetry, we can have an extremely rich phase diagram. Without any symmetry, there's for example, there is only one type of insulator. But once we introduce time-reversal symmetry, we find out actually there exists two distinct types of insulators, the trivial insulator and topological insulator. And there is no way to continuously deform a topological insulator into a trivial insulator without closing the gap while preserving time-reversal symmetry. So there are a few two particular property for the topological insulator. One is a potential surface state of topological insulator, which is confirmed in RPAS and many other experiments. The other property is quantized bulk response of topological insulators, in particular the topological magneto-electric effect of the topological insulator. In other words, when you apply a magnetic field, you will actually observe electric polarization, which is proportional to the magnetic field, and the coefficient is quantized. So these properties tells us actually robust feature of these quantum phases, due to which are completely protected by symmetry. And actually, the concept of topological insulator were later found to be able to extend to more general systems, such as interacting spin system, interacting boson system, and so on, thus leading to the concept of so-called symmetry protected topological phases. Soon after the discovery of TI, people start to ask, what is the role of other global symmetries, such as SU2 spin rotational symmetry and particle symmetry in determining these topological band structures. And soon, a periodic table of topological insulator and superconductor were obtained. And later, people extend the global symmetries into spatial symmetries. The first trial, the main question people try to address is that, could spatial symmetry similar to global symmetry also give us non-trivial band structure? So the first success was realized in these so-called weak topological insulators. So these weak topological insulators host surface state which are protected by translation symmetry in addition to time-reversal symmetries. And then later, people found out that actually other than translation symmetry, point group symmetry, such as rotational symmetry, as first pointed out by Fu, can also lead to topological insulator and protected surface states. And therefore, we have the concept of so-called topological crystalline insulator, which I have discussed by Vidya earlier. And soon after this, proposal of this concept, a material was theoretically predicted, which is the tin telluride. And it was soon experimentally verified by APAS, STM, and various experimental probes. So in these materials on the surface, they have multiple Dirac points on the surface. And they are protected by crystal symmetry instead of time-reversal symmetries. So theorists also realized that the theoretical study of the crystal symmetry protected topological insulator are also important, because these properties are actually also stable with respect to a disorder, as long as disorder doesn't break the symmetry on average. Therefore, this gives us enough motivation to look at topological band structure induced by crystal symmetries. So generally, for generic crystal symmetry, there are two types of them. They can be categorized into two broader classes. One is called symorphic symmetry. The other called non-symorphic symmetry. So we call space group symorphic if it's a direct product of point group operations and crystal translation operations. So intuitively, this tells us actually there is at least one point in space which remain invariant under all these space group operations up to integer translations of the Barbe primitive vectors. So these are the definition of symorphic space group. So any space group which doesn't satisfy this condition is called a non-symorphic group. So typically, the non-symorphic symmetry operations contains a fractional translation, which translates by a fraction of Barbe primitive vectors in addition to certain space group operations. These non-symorphic symmetry are rather generic in crystallography. For example, in 230 three-dimensional space groups, 73 of them are symorphic, and 157 of them contain non-symorphic operations. So this is very usual in crystallography. Therefore, it's also very important. So there are typically two types of non-symmorphic symmetry. One type is what people call glide reflection. So this here I plot out a comparison of the glide reflection and usual point group mirror reflection. So for the point group mirror reflection, all these points on this mirror reflection plane is invariant under the reflection. But for the glide reflection, in addition to the mirror reflection, it's followed by actually a half translation, a translation by 1/2 of the unit primitive Bravais lattice vector. So this is a half translation. So this is the so-called glide reflection. So it differs by the mirror reflection by a half translation. And another type of non-symmorphic symmetry is the called screw rotation symmetry. So in addition to a point group rotational symmetry, like in this case, the two-fold rotational symmetry, it's followed by another like 1/2 translation, translation by 1/2 of the Bravais lattice vectors. So generally, these screw rotation, the rotation angle could be 180 degree here, or 90 degree when we, or 120 degree when it's a three-fold screw rotation, or 90 degree when it's a four-fold screw rotation, or 60 degree when it's six-fold rotation. These are all the possibilities appearing in crystallography. So we can define a rank of the of these non-symmorphic symmetry in the following way. So suppose now I implement the non-symmorphic symmetry multiple times. For example, for this glide symmetry, I implemented it twice. So after twice this operation, we can see that the net outcome of this twice acting of the glide reflection symmetry is actually just a simple translation along a unit primitive vector. In contrast, for a point group mirror reflection symmetry, if you act it twice, every point in space go back to itself. So it go back to identity operation. But for the glide operation, it doesn't go back to identity. It goes back to a translation. Similarly, for screw rotation, when you act it multiple times, you end up with a translation by a unit primitive vector. So this is the example of these non-symmorphic symmetries. So now the question we're trying to address in the system is that, since if we look at a symmetry group, this non-symmorphic group is very different from the symmorphic group, in a sense that there is no point in space which is invariant under operation in non-symmorphic group. So does this non-symmorphic groups actually impose some new constraints on the topological property of these band insulators? So you probably remember on Monday morning, Ashwin gave a talk on the constraint of non-symmorphic symmetry on the filling number of electrons to form a band insulator. So here we ask a slightly different question. Suppose I already have a band insulator which preserves the non-symmorphic symmetry. So how could the topological properties such as surface states and topological index of the topological insulator, how are they restricted by the non-symmorphic symmetry? This is the question I'm trying to address. And the answer is yes, otherwise I wouldn't be giving this talk. So the major conclusion is that there are strong conditions on these so translation-related so-called weak index of topological insulators as imposed by these non-symmorphic symmetry. And these conclusions actually have important applications on many materials such as three-dimensional quantum Hall effect, wild semi metals, and three-dimensional weak topological insulator and topological superconductors. So the second question I'm trying to address, does non-symmorphic symmetry actually lead to new topological insulators which are protected by these non-symmorphic symmetries? And the answer is yes. I will briefly discuss this part if I have time. So this is this part is posted in this paper. So for the first question, since as we mentioned, the screw operation, when we for the non-symmorphic operation, when we act it multiple times, they always lead to a translation operation. So therefore, to understand the property given by these non-symmorphic symmetry on topological insulators, we would like to first comment on the property given by translation symmetry on topological insulators. Actually, the consequence, the most significant consequence of translation symmetry on insulators is that they give rise to a class so-called weak topological index. So a simple picture for these so-called weak topological insulator is the following. They are protected by translation symmetry. So suppose right now this, okay, this color doesn't show very well. So this red arrow means the Bravais lattice vector along z direction. So now a simple intuitive picture for the so-called weak topological insulator protected by this translation along the z direction is simply a stacking of two-dimensional quantum Hall layers, which are perpendicular to z direction. Suppose I stack these quantum Hall insulators together while preserving this translation symmetry. This gives rise to the so-called weak topological insulators. So these weak topological insulators are also characterized by certain topological response. For example, the Hall conductance per unit cell along the z direction is a quantized integer quantity, integer value in unit of v squared over h. So this is the quantized topological response of the system. In momentum space, if we look at the band structure, there's also an invariant in momentum space. This invariant is nothing but the Chern number. If we look at a two-dimensional plane, which are perpendicular to z direction, we compute the Chern number of the two-dimensional plane. This Chern number is this integer index. So in this simple example I showed, in every unit cell, there is one integer quantum layer. So the whole conductance is e squared over h times 1. And this Chern number in every plane is 1. That simple. So now, suppose right now we have a screw symmetry. This is a two-fold screw rotation, as labeled by these two triangles. So after 180-degree rotation, they are also followed by a translation by half a unit vector. So suppose I have a screw rotation. I still try to see, how do I gain weak topological insulators? Therefore, I want to insert one integer quantum layer in every unit cell along the z direction. Now, suppose I insert the integer quantum layer in this way, in this specific way. Suppose right now I act a two-fold screw rotation on the system. I see the system actually, the configuration changes. It goes to a different configuration. Therefore, this configuration is not invariant under screw rotation. So it breaks screw symmetry. After a few exercises, you will convince yourself, actually, if I want to insert one integer quantum layer into the unit cell while preserving screw axis, it's simply impossible. So you cannot do that. The only way to insert quantum layers while preserving the screw, the two-fold screw rotation, is to insert two integer quantum layers instead of just one integer quantum layers into every unit cell. This is the only way to preserve the two-fold screw axis and end up with the insulator. So this actually imposes a very strong condition on the quantum hole response of the system. It tells us, actually, the whole conduction per unit cell along the z direction has to be an even integer along the direction which is the screw axis. Like in this case, screw axis is z direction. So the whole conduction has to be even integer. And more generally, if it's an n-fold screw, like in this case, it's a two-fold screw. It's a 180-degree rotation followed by half translation. It could also be a three-fold screw, a 120-degree rotation, and four-fold screw, six-fold screw. In this general case, this simple picture leads to the conclusion that the whole conductance per unit cell along z-direction has to be multiple of n. N is the rank of the screw operation. So now we have such a simple picture and a simple conclusion. How can we prove that? Actually, there is a remarkably simple proof for this conclusion that I can even outline the whole process for you. So the key property we used to prove this conclusion is the fact that in the presence of non-symmorphic symmetry, if we look at high symmetry lines in the system, if we look at the field band at these along these high symmetry lines, the field band must appear in multiples, entangled multiples, due to the non-symmorphic symmetry. The reason is simply the following. Suppose right now, let's look at a glide symmetry. Let's say a glide symmetry which, when you act it twice, leads to a translation along z direction. So therefore, the glide square equal to EI KZ. KZ is momentum along z direction. So if you look at the eigenvalue of this glide operation, it's plus minus exponential I KZ divided by 2. So these are the eigenvalue of the screw operation. So for every KZ, I can label them by this eigenvalue. Now, suppose now I start to go along, travel along this KZ, travel along KS equal to KY equal to 0, this line, and changing KZ from 0 to 2 pi. As I change KZ from 0 to 2 pi, this value jumps from plus 1 to minus 1, change sign. Okay, so therefore, these bands actually always appear in pairs. This band evolves into the other band and then goes into this one. So they always appear in pairs at these high symmetry points. Similarly, for n-fold screw rotation, the band always always appear in n multiples, in multiple of n. That number of bands must be low under Fermi level. And they are also characterized by different eigenvalue of these screw rotations. And these bands, we notice that they have band touchings. The band touching at high symmetry points are also protected because they have different eigenvalue of these non-symmorphic operators. So the hybridization between these bands are strictly forbidden by symmetry. Therefore, I have these multiples. Okay, so notice that what we want to actually prove is that the whole conduction per unit cell along the direction of the screw axis has to be multiples of 2 for a two-fold screw rotation. So this is the same as saying, if I look at a two-dimensional plane, which is perpendicular to the screw axis, I want to compute the Tran number of the plane. It has to be multiples of 2. How do I actually prove that? So suppose if I look at a 2D plane, the screw rotational symmetry behaves nothing but an in-plane C2 rotation in the system. So for this C2 rotation in the system, we want to prove that the Tran number has to be even integer. So so we start from atomic insulator where Tran number is 0. We can see, we want to see how does Tran number changes in the while preserving the C2 rotational symmetry. So C2 rotational symmetry tell us if the band touching happens, they must happen in pairs, except from these high symmetry points. When a band touching happens in pairs, every Dirac point at the band touching, they transfer Tran number 1. So such a pair transfer Tran number 2. So such a pair of band touching doesn't change the parity of Tran number. So in order to look at the parity of Tran number, only you need to focus on high symmetry points. And then you can convince yourself, actually, just by looking at the product of the C2 rotation eigenvalue as high symmetry points, you can get the parity of Tran number in this case. Now let's look at our case where we have screw rotation. At screw rotation, at all these 4 high symmetry points, the bands always appear in pairs, right? So every high symmetry point contributes the same value because the bands always appear in pairs. Therefore, the product of them always give you 1. That tells us the Tran number has to be 1. Has to be even integer in this plane. Therefore, we have proved that in the presence of screw axis, the Tran number in every plane perpendicular to screw axis has to be multiples of 2, has to be even integer. And Hall conductance, therefore, per unit cell is also even integer. So this is a simple proof. So the general conclusion we have is that for Hall conductance per unit cell along an n-fold screw axis must be a multiple of n in unit of e squared over h if the system is a band insulator. Otherwise, you either end up with a gapless system, such as a metallic, a metal, or the system actually preserves topological order, which means the system supports fractional particles. So this conclusion seems to be rather academic. So is there any use for this conclusion? It turns out, actually, whenever you have such a general conclusion, there's always many applications for this conclusion. The first application is that we could look at a three-dimensional quantum Hall effect in a three-dimensional material. A simplest example is graphite. So graphite with a Bernal AB stacking has a space group number 194. So this space group has a two-fold screw axis along this C direction. So due to this theorem, we know that Hall conduction per unit length along C direction has to be integer of 2, has to be even integer. So this is the prediction from this theorem. So therefore, it means that if we end up with the insulator in graphite with a Hall conductance of 1 per unit cell along C direction, that insulator has to be fractionalized insulator. So it cannot be a trivial band insulator. Indeed, actually, in some theory proposal of the Hall conductance in graphite, what people preserve is actually the Hall conductance per unit length along C direction is 4 in unit of E squared over H. Okay, the second application of this conclusion is the wild sand metal, which has been introduced yesterday and today. But let me still make a small comment on this. So wild sand metal, wild points are band touching in the system, which carries Berry curvature. Like these red and blue points, they carry Berry curvature 2 pi and minus 2 pi. So the traditional wild sand metal introduced here, they have linear dispersing in all directions. So the simple picture for that is that suppose you now consider a two-dimensional plane in a system. In a three-dimensional system. When a two-dimensional plane crosses a wild point, the Tran number jumps by 1, jumps from 0 to 1, like in this case, due to the band touching at the wild points. So this fact is due to the wild point is actually dispersed linearly in all directions. So it transfers Tran number 1. So now, suppose we actually have a screw axis in the system. As we said, the Tran number perpendicular to the Tran number perpendicular in any plane perpendicular to the screw axis must be multiples of n. Therefore, if we look at these 2D planes, the Tran number jumps by n. So that means we cannot have a single wild point which disperses linearly. It has to be either several wild points, and which either we could have multiples like multiples of n numbers of wild points, each of which disperses linearly in all directions. Or we could have a more exotic wild points, which are what people call multi-wild points, which disperses linearly in one direction and quadratically, or and non-linearly in other directions. So indeed, this is actually what is predicted in certain materials. So this is one of the first material actually predicted as a wild semi-metal, which is a ferromagnetic spinel, mercury, chromium, selenium, as proposed by a group of Shida and Fang Zhong first. So the space group of the material actually is this number 227. So in this material, as the system develops magnetic order along one axis, the whole space group is actually broken down to a subgroup. The subgroup contains actually a fourfold rotation symmetry and an inversion symmetry. The fourfold rotation symmetry actually have a special property here. In the sense that the fourfold rotation, when you act it twice, it end up with an integer translation along a Bravais lattice vector, multiplies multiplies by a point group twofold rotation. So this means that the bands along these high symmetry lines, they appear in pairs instead of in quadruplets, because these screw axes, they are actually twofold. So this gives us a conclusion that the Chern number in any plane perpendicular to the z direction, which is screw axis, must be an even integer. And indeed, actually, this is what is predicting LDA. In this case, if you look at a plane which is perpendicular to z direction, the Chern number is either 0 or 2. And it jumps by 2 as it crosses this so-called this double wild point. This double wild point has linear dispersing in z direction and quadratic dispersing in plane. So this is actually one application of this theorem. So there is another material which recently proposed to be a wild semi-metal, which is strontium diselenide, proposed by Hassan group. So this material also have actually screw axis, twofold screw axis along 110 direction, and all the other direction related by cubic symmetry. And it has a fourfold screw axis along 100 direction. Indeed, in the system, actually a pair of quadratic band touchings, quadratic so-called double wild points, happens along 100 direction in the system, which changes Chern number by 4. So this is also consistent with this theorem. So okay, so now let's try to extend this conclusion of these wild points, the conclusion of the insulators, of magnetic insulator in the absence of time isosymmetry, to the more generic system. In other words, the insulators with time isosymmetry. Suppose right now I'm looking at a three-dimensional time iso insulator, time iso invariant insulators. What are the constraints imposed by these non-symmorphic symmetries on the weak index of this three-dimensional topological insulator? So the weak three-dimensional topological insulator again have a simple picture, which is a stacked two-dimensional layers of quantum spin hole insulator. So every layer is quantum spin hole insulator. You can think of it as a spin up insulators with Hall conductance 1, and a spin down insulator Hall conductance minus 1, and you stack them while preserving the translation symmetry along z direction. So so in these systems, suppose right now I have screw axis along z direction. Discussed earlier, for the case of quantum Hall's case, right now if I have screw axis, it looks like every index has to double or multiples due to this screw axis. So this means actually, suppose right now I either have a glide reflection, which have contain a fractional translation along z direction, or I have an even fold screw rotation, which have a translation along z direction. Whenever I have z symmetries, the index per unit cell has to double. This would actually forbid the existence of a weak topological insulator in this system. So therefore, this theorem actually also provides actually strong constraint on the possibility of weak insulators, weak topological insulators, knowing the space group symmetry of the system. So it tells us whenever we have a non-symmorphic symmetry, such as a glide reflection symmetry and screw rotation symmetries, it actually forbids certain possibility of the weak index of a three-dimensional topological insulators. So maybe it's a better place to actually look for weak topological insulator in those symmorphic space groups. So the case with the glide symmetry, you can prove that actually the weak index has to vanish based on K-theory. So the case of screw rotational symmetry, you can also prove actually the Z2 index of this topological insulator per unit cell has to vanish due to an index formula for the two-dimensional quantum spin hole insulator. So these are the application of this framework to the time iso invariant insulators. And we could also possibly apply it to superconductors. So the big picture is still the same. So the weak topological insulator, weak topological index of the system. In other words, In the case of a superconductor, if we are talking about singular superconductor, which break time source symmetry, we can define spin quantum Hall conductance per unit length in z direction. Their conductance has also to be either doubled or multiplied due to non-symmorphic symmetry. And in the class D, which is a time reversal breaking superconductor with spin orbit coupling, which doesn't have the SU2 spin rotational symmetry, such a conclusion also give rise to actually a doubling or multiplication of these quantized thermal Hall conductance per unit length. Okay. And we could also actually extend this concept to another one-dimensional weak index of these topological insulators, and to show that they have to double in the presence of screw or glide symmetries. So the big picture we have here is that whenever we have a non-symmorphic symmetry, such as glide reflection or screw rotation, these symmetries are always associated with translation. You can think of they are related to fractional of those translation. The translation gives rise to a bunch of weak index. So there are zero-dimensional weak index, which essentially are fillings per unit cell. And the doubling or multiplying of this zero-dimensional index leads to the constraints on the insulators in the presence of non-symmorphic symmetry, right, which are discussed by Parameshwan et al. And by Watanabe et al. And by Ashwin's talk on Monday, basically. And in the one-dimensional index, these index will also be doubled or multiplied due to non-symmorphic symmetry, and also 2D index. So this is a general framework of the interplay of non-symmorphic symmetry and the topological index in the system. So this is the first part of the talk. So I will rush over second part, which is very, very quick. So yeah. Okay, I always thought I could earn more time as being a colleague of the chair. Yeah. Okay, so the second part is about the topological insulator and superconductor protected by the non-symmorphic symmetry. So I'll be very quick. So the idea is that we know topological insulators can be characterized by their topological magneto-electrical response. In other words, it's a theta term, E dot B term. So theta value can be either 0 or pi. The simple argument is that under time reversal symmetry, E doesn't change sign, magnetic field change sign. So the theta has to change sign. And theta is defined modular 2 pi. So if theta changes sign under time reversal, theta can either be 0 or pi if they want to preserve time reversal. So since theta doesn't jump, theta cannot jump, it can only changes gradually by continuous deformation. So theta equal to 0 pi corresponds to two different classes of insulator, the trivial insulator and topological insulator. Pi is the topological insulator. And also inversion symmetry, later people show that inversion changes sign of E but not B. So you can also quantize theta to be 0 pi, give rise to a topological insulator. And also improper rotations can also do this. What we showed here is that a glide reflection can also do this, and give you quantized response in the system and give you protected topological insulator and superconductors. So in the case of topological insulator, we actually showed that in a model first proposed by Chen Fang and Liang Fu first. We showed the system actually have quantized magneto-electric effect. We compute a theta value. And to show that in different parameter regime, it's either 0 pi in the trivial insulator with no surface state and topological insulator with surface state. And this concept can be extended to topological superconductor as well. For example, in class D, in time reversal superconductor with spin orbit coupling, similarity analog of the P plus IP superconductor in three dimensions. In these systems, with no extra symmetry, the classification is trivial. You don't have non-trivial superconductor in 3D. But when you have a glide reflection symmetry, you can show that glide reflection can protect the topological insulator with protected surface state. In class C, which have SU2 spin rotational symmetry, singular superconductor, which break time reversal, you can show that with no extra symmetry, the classification is again trivial. In 3D, there is no non-trivial superconductor. But when you have a glide symmetry, there are protected surface state and quantized response function. So non-symmorphic symmetry, in particular glide symmetry, can give rise to a topological insulator and superconductor. With this, I'd like to conclude, and thanks for your attention.
You didn't need my help.
Questions?
Yeah.
I have a question regarding your first part.
Okay.
So I'm not quite understand for why school rotation is so important. It seems that I have ordinary rotation like CN can do the similar job because
it doesn't do. So in the presence of the usual CN symmetry, the Chern number per unit cell can be any integer. It doesn't have any multiples simply because there is no multiplic.
Right. But you look at the appearance at the number of like wild points once you change, you smoothly change your Hamiltonian.
Yeah.
If you try to keep CN, they will appear
in multiples.
If it's C2,
but
same multiples.
Yes, yes. The point is that they could also appear in high symmetry points. So if they appear in high symmetry if they appear in high symmetry points, then like in these points, there can be just one. But the point is that here, there cannot be just one band touching. The Chern number has to jump by two. So it's also like one of the playground to look for these multi-wild points.
So this question is a little vague, but let me ask you anyway.
Yeah.
So in a wild semi-metal, there are wild nodes of opposite chiralities.
Yes.
A screw has a certain handedness.
Has a certain what?
Handedness, helicity, or chirality.
Okay.
So I'm just wondering whether a wild semi-metal in a material which has a screw symmetry, the screw symmetry itself causes the wild nodes to behave in different ways in some way in some transport experiment.
I don't think so.
So can the screw...
When you say it's chirality, it's related to translation, right? The translation is not, somehow doesn't show up in an obvious way in a band structure, so I don't think it show up in any sort of measurement related to chirality. Yeah, it's more.
You talked about impossibility of certain kind of weak topological insulators.
That yes.
In when you have non-isomorphic symmetry. So.
Insulator, right? TI.
Yeah. So if I have a generic interacting SPT phase in 2D, and then I define some three-dimensional phase by stacking it in the same way. Is there so this applies to a generic interacting system, or is it only for?
I think it applies to generally interacting systems.
Yeah.
Like for the whole conductance, I think that conclusion holds even in the present interaction. I have some ideas, but I don't have rigorous math right now to the interacting case.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. For interacting bosonic, fermionic, both or.
I believe it's true.
Okay.
Yeah. It's this weak index physics is always there.
Right.
Yeah. It doesn't depend on interacting or not.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Thanks.
Other questions?
Okay.
So what are the prospects of seeing this theta E dot B term in any experiment?
I guess surface state is a manifestation. Like if you gap the surface, some Hall conductance on the surface.
But nobody's seen the magnetoelectric effect.
Okay. Yeah. You should ask some experts of TI. Ask Liang Fu. Yeah.
You said that the this response comes as even numbers, otherwise it's a metal. Because it comes as a pair, that I understood, but
So
it
basically
crosses at some point, right?
Sorry?
So it comes as a pair, and it crosses at some it crosses at some momentum point.
Right.
So that's why if you have like a half field, you will get a metal. But that's not necessarily the case. That depends on, as you know very well, these glide eigenvalues and the Kramers pairs, if they come with the different eigenvalues, don't have to cross. I mean, they can anti-cross.
Okay, the point is right now, You mean it doesn't necessarily look like this?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
yeah, I'm just saying.
They can open up the gap there.
For sure, for sure. That's for sure. I'm just trying to say if they cross, the crossing is protected. I mean, the point for me is simple. I'm assuming an insulator.
Right.
So I'm just looking at those bands below
exactly,
the fermi level.
But you said that if it is not, then it should be a metal. I'm saying that necessarily has to be a metal because in some cases they anti-cross and you can open up the gap.
No, I think it has to be metal. When I say it has to be metal, it's by looking at the response.
In this response, okay.
Whole conductance response. So, yeah. If the Hall conductance is not multiple of n unit v square of h, it has to be either a metal or fractionalized insulator. In essence, that I think has nothing to do with this band touching or anything. As long, I think this is a general issue. It's like if I have an insulator, because I assume if I have an insulator,
if
it has to be multiples of n.
Yes.
So
okay.
Yeah. So suppose if it's not,
way.
then it cannot be. Yeah.
All right. Fine.
Yeah.
Other questions? Okay, if not, then we have a few more minutes for a tea break.
Yeah.
And after that, we have one more talk. So I just wanted to tell you before the post is by Evelyn. Thank you, Anne-Marie.